Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. This is episode number 660 for November 12th, 2020. And I'm your host, Allison Sheridan. Well, it wouldn't be an Apple announcement week without having Lori Gill, managing editor of iMore, back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back. This is great.
We have so much fun to have today. We've got the new Apple announcements. We got Big Sur dropping. But Lori and I were talking, and I wanted to bring it up on the recording here. We are having an Everything is Fiddly morning. What, your camera wasn't working. My spotlight index isn't working. It's just...
Everything's falling apart. Everything is fiddly right now.
Right. Well, so when I mentioned that my spotlight was reindexing because it's had its panties in a bunch, you told me something I did not know, which is about Launchpad.
Yeah. So I use, first of all, Launchpad is going away. I don't think it's in Big Sur. I think it's going to be in one of the later ones, like Big Sur 0.2 or something like that. So it's going away. And for most people, that it doesn't even matter. They don't care. So
yeah,
no big deal.
Launchpad's job was to bounce in the dock when you install things. I thought that's what it's for. I didn't like, so you know it's done. I didn't know people use it.
Yeah, except me. I use it. but I have, you know, I've asked a lot of my coworkers and friends, and I am definitely a rare case. I'm not the norm. I don't know why. It's just a habit. I've been using Launchpad since, you know, I first got my first Mac, and then later they introduced Spotlight, and I never really like switched over. I just kept using Launchpad. So
I wonder, when you're on your phone, do you find things by the phone screen or do you search to launch apps?
I search. Well, actually, you know, I'm going to say before iOS 14, I used to swipe and tap the app. I knew I had a very well organized home screen. I had folders and it was beautiful. But now with iOS 14 making it so much easier to actually organize your home screens and get rid of things, I find myself using the search way more often. So I did switch over, but like Spotlight's been available on the iPhone for I can't even remember how many years now. And I didn't used to use it. It's only since we've been able to like have more customizations on our home screen that I've finally decided to start actually using Spotlight to search for things. So
I'm wondering whether the reason I was asking that was because I'm wondering whether you are somebody who thinks more visually and not in text. I tend to just think in text or the reason this came up, why I wanted to talk about it, was my friend Niraj and I used to do web development stuff together. And we discovered that I thought in Cartesian coordinates. I would describe something as being in the upper left-hand corner or the lower right-hand corner, and he never knew, he could never find what I was talking about when we were on the phone. And he spoke in colors. He'll say, you know, click in the blue box. I'm like, yeah, but where is the blue box? And what we discovered was when I wanted to tell him where something was, I needed to tell him color and shape. He had to tell me coordinates. And as soon as we realized that, we communicated much better. So I think people's brains work differently on this stuff.
I definitely agree with that. And I know I'm a visual learner. I'm one of those people. If you tell me how to do something, it just goes right out my ear. But if you show me how to do it, I will never forget it. So yeah, I'm definitely more of a visual learner. So I think just your description of this anecdote that you're talking about specifically that makes so much sense that I don't know, like I haven't had the experience where I would talk about something like, you know, click on that blue box up there, but I bet I do. Like I haven't paid attention to the fact that whether I do that or not, but I bet I'm that kind of person who is more like descriptive of shapes and colors and things instead of location, like geolocation, like you're talking about. So yeah, that's so interesting.
I think it really came home to me when he was telling a story about talking to his dad and he said, click on Eagle Mail, Daddy. And I said, Eagle Mail? What are you talking about? Do you know what he means?
I mean, I guess what he means is the icon of, would it be the email? Like Apple's email?
It turns
email?
Out mail is a stamp with an
eagle
with
an
on
eagle
it.
On
I had
it.
Never seen the eagle before. I knew it was like blue or something, you know, but that's a pretty good guess on an icon, right?
Yeah,
I just didn't know. And that showed how much he was looking at color and shape, and I wasn't at all. I knew it was called mail. I hit command space mail.
Right.
And then it doesn't launch.
Whereas I always click on the mail icon. I don't search for mail. I click on the mail icon in my dock. I'm much more involved in like what things visually look like. And if there are two apps that look similar, I get so mad because the Photos app and the Skype app are both little round objects that have rainbow colors inside of them that are actually similar in color even. And I will always accidentally click on one when I'm trying to click on the other.
That was funny. I do notice that once I've got stuff launched, I'm more of in a mess, like To Do and Visual Studio Code. Those icons are interchangeable to me. They look exactly the same. I never click on the same one twice. Well, anyway, well, that was kind of just a fun little sidebar because we were talking about it. Before we dig into the M1 Mac announcements, did you order your precious iPhone Mini?
I surely did. I was up at 4. Let's see. It went pre-orders went live at 5 a.m. my time. So I woke up at 4:55 and I just rolled over and I grabbed my phone because the night before I prepped for it. So they've actually improved the process of preparing to pre-order. It used to just be you just click the heart button and then you've favorited that device and then you have to go through the process of pre-ordering it like all the way through. You know, you could pick your your model and things like that, but you were kind of stuck at a point where you had to actually like order the phone. But this year they updated it so that you can get all the way through the process of pre-ordering right up to the point where you actually click the buy button. And then when I opened the app, this is through the Apple Store app. So as soon as I opened the Apple Store app at 4:55, the pre-order screen was right there. I didn't have to go find it in my favorites or anything like that. It was right there. And instead of saying buy, it said, we're almost ready or come back soon or something like that. So I just laid there for 5 minutes staring at like, you know, close as soon as 5 a.m. hit, closing, reopening, because of course it wasn't ready right away. And at about 5:04 a.m., I pre-ordered it. I got the 128 gig blue iPhone 12 mini, and I cannot wait. I'm so excited about it.
Oh man, that sounds so fun. I did the same thing, but I don't think I realized you could go farther in the process. I went to, I bought two HomePod minis and I favorited them, but then that's all I did.
The HomePods, you can't do that. All you can do is favorite them. The phones are the only thing that has that kind of like more advanced pre-order part to it. Because I also tried to do the same thing with the HomePod minis. I bought two of them as well. Did you try to buy three and it wouldn't let you?
No. Oh, you couldn't?
You can't buy three. Well, I don't know what it is at this point. I haven't tried to go back to buy the third one, but I put three in my basket. And when I went to buy, it said only two HomePod minis per household is the wording for it. So I had to get rid of one of them and only buy the two. I'm still going to get a third. I don't know if it has to do with like your Apple ID. So again, I haven't tried to get the third one. So I don't know if I can just order the third one, same Apple ID and everything. In fact, I think I brought this up on one of the other podcasts I was on. And I believe I got an email from a reader that said they were able to do that. They were able to just make two purchases to get all three of them. So,
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a purchasing limitation. But, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, I didn't care. I just bought the two and figured I'd be done with it.
I got really lucky. We happened to be in Arizona when the day came. So it was 6 a.m. So that worked out.
So you got an extra hour of sleep.
And it did not seem terribly difficult to pick to get the HomePod minis. But I heard they sold out, right?
Are they? Are they already? I hadn't actually paid attention, other than just being excited for them to get here, which we still have another week before they get here.
When is it going to get here?
I know.
So greedy now, right?
I have to wait 2 weeks after delivering? What?
This is unacceptable. Well, we should dig into the M1 Max, and I think the way I wanted to approach this is, what do these things all have in common, really? So we got a Mac Mini, we got a MacBook Air and we got a MacBook Pro, and it seems like there's an awful lot more in common than there is not in common, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're speaking specifically to the M1 processor that's in all three of them, which basically eliminates a lot of the customizations that you used to be able to do with Mac computers. You used to, you know, be able to, you know, upgrade your processor and all that kind of stuff, and that's not able, you can't do that anymore because it's all on the M1 chip. It's all on that system on a chip. So in terms of their sort of capabilities, I think in a way you are right that there's a lot of similarities across the three. But I think that there's other elements at play outside of just that system on the chip that does make a difference for things like the MacBook Pro versus the MacBook Air, for example. I haven't dug into the Mac Mini's differences. It's sort of the unwanted child of the Mac lineup for some. So they're great. They really are great, but that's not something that I focus on as much. So I don't have as much understanding of it. But
let's talk about the MacBook Pro versus the MacBook Air, because I went through all of the specs and I found one thing different.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which is, I'm guessing the screen.
Well, one of it was the screen brightness. Mm-hmm. So the screen is 500 nits versus 400 nits on mm-hmm. the MacBook Air. And I don't understand why.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that all has to do with saving money, for one thing. They would have to upgrade the MacBook Air's display to get it to that 500 nits. So they're keeping it at that slightly lower nit brightness. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it's always been just like just as good, but not quite just as good. So it's just like a little, just the tiniest bit of a tweak in that way. So I think like all of the other resolution specs are exactly the same except for that nit brightness. And I think that just has to do with like power and efficiency. They didn't want to have to like spend more money to make the MacBook Air have that kind of extra brightness that the MacBook Pro has. So there's that. And then
the battery life is also not as good on the MacBook Air. So maybe allowing it to be that bright would have degraded it more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's bad. It's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. And it all comes down to that same sort of thing of the key for Apple right now was to provide this extremely fast new Mac, but keep it the same price as it always has been. And there's a balance of features and economy in this. So to get you the MacBook Air for $999, for example, they can't overload it with all these new things. They kind of have to keep it all the same because they already invested in all of these features. And so that's not costing them more money, but they did just put in a brand new processor. So that's going to cost a lot of money. So how do we balance that? So okay. I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, finding the balance between keeping that price down, but providing these completely new specs for these computers.
That makes sense. Okay. I didn't realize it was a lower brightness before. And almost everybody I know keeps the brightness down. I'm the only one I know who I reach over to other people's computers. If they want to show me something, you're going max brightness. Because if you get the screen brighter, your pupils contract, gives you a longer depth of field. It's easier to see and read. And I don't know why everybody does it down low. It drives me crazy.
Do you think it might be, my guess is because of battery consumption. They're trying to conserve their battery. And that's not really as much of a problem when we basically have a full day's worth of computer use now. So maybe all of your friends, I actually keep my brightness up on my laptop, my Mac laptop all the time too. I just think fancy screen. Why not make it as bright as possible?
I'm looking at a 5K display that I have blasted to as bright as it'll go. And I do it on everything. It drives me crazy. People do it on their phones. They try to show me something. You're like 8% brightness.
Yeah.
I can't even tell there's something on screen. Go away. I want to get back to system on a chip. So this is a term I've heard people like Renee yapping about forever. Yeah. And I never understood what it was. I think I understand it better because of the latest presentation, but can you talk about what is system on a chip? Why do we care? what is 5 nanometer? I know Intel was at 10. They said they were going to be at 7, but they're now stuck on 10. They haven't even gotten to 7. And Apple's like, we're at 5.
We got five.
Yeah. What does all that mean? Why do we care about nanometers and what is system on a chip?
Yeah. So system on a chip it's basically a processor chip that has more than just the processor on the chip. So it brings together things like the CPU and the GPU, which is why you can't customize those things on these Macs now. So it brings them all onto one chip. And in the case of the M1, I think it's the neural engine is on it. I think I actually wrote a list of it that I can name off really quickly. So it has advanced power management, high bandwidth cache, cryptography acceleration, high performance unified memory, that's the RAM, high efficiency CPU cores, HDR video processing. So these are all things that the secure enclave, these are all things that used to need their own separate chip. So system on a chip means the system is now on a chip. So it just brings it all together into one place.
Why is that more efficient, or what happens as a result of that?
Yeah, so the benefit to having something like system on a chip, which it's, you know, I don't know if there's any other computer out there that uses system on a chip. I don't know PCs very well, so there might be. But what's great about being able to do something like this is it's all now collected into one place. So when your applications and your programs are trying to grab processing power to pay attention to it, it doesn't, the chip no longer has to reach outside of itself to grab memory, to grab, you know, processing power. It's all in one thing and can be interchangeable within itself, which is why there was so much conversation about the 8 cores and how it's 4 cores of energy efficiency and 4 cores of power efficiency. This is all interchangeable stuff, which wasn't as easy to do before. So using a program that's really power heavy, for example, you were, processor heavy, you were giving up power efficiency to use this processor efficiency. But because these systems are now all on one chip, it can grab some of the processor efficiency, grab some of the power efficiency, and keep a balance. And you're not going to see the same spikes as you used to when you're using those really heavy programs, heavy processing programs.
Okay, that makes sense. I would think also that if any kind of energy has to transfer between chips, it's going to go on a little wire on the circuit board. And that's going to generate heat more than it would be if it's only going a little bitty bit of distance within the chip. I would guess that you're getting a lot of power efficiency because you're not wasting energy because you're not going as far. You're just going little tiny bitty distances.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So the 7 nanometer, 10 nanometer, yeah. 5 nanometer, so how does that fit in?
The difference in the nanometers, basically... Let's see, the best way that I can put this. So the less nanometers, the more density, the more transistor density you get. So
this is within the transistor.
As you go within the chip itself. Okay. So if you start with 10 nanometers, I don't know the numbers, but I'm going to pretend right now. I'm going to make it up, right?
Okay.
So, you know, you've got 100 million nanometer or transistors in a 10 millimeter chip. By the time you get down to 5 nanometers, you're looking at, as Apple said, I think it's 13 billion transistors. So that is
16
packing
billion.
In 16 billion. That's, again, the 100 million. I don't know what 10 nanometers is, but that's okay. The point is that it has now compiled all of these transistors into a smaller, more efficient chip. And it's more of them. So it's not just that it made it smaller. It gave more density to those nanometers. So now at 5 nanometers, it's
nice and cozy.
Fitting in more processing power into a smaller, more efficient thing. They're more cozy, exactly.
It seems like we're going to get down to subatomic distances pretty soon.
They're already working on 3-nanometer technology. So Apple that's, I don't know how long it'll be before that happens. A lot of companies are. Apple might be the first to market on that. I don't know. But it's already being worked on. So, and I think I heard that 1-nanometer is in the pipeline for like maybe 2027 or something like that. So, yeah, that's all being worked on. So
that's crazy. Well, so that now that I understand that better, now if we talk again about the MacBook Pro versus the MacBook Air, like I said, the one thing we noticed was the screen difference. But the other thing is that, and I did not notice this before I told somebody which one to buy. If you choose the 256 gigabyte MacBook Air versus the 512 gigabyte MacBook Air, the 256 has one fewer graphics cores. It's got seven instead of eight. Yeah. And the 512 has eight. What are they
what
doing
gives?
There? Yeah.
So I think, again, this comes back to Apple trying to keep that $999 price point. So they didn't, you know, completely redo every single Mac in the entire lineup because they know that there's going to be people who need more than the minimum. But they also want to give you the same price that you paid for an iPad Air last year, or sorry, MacBook Air last year. And in fact, the MacBook Air is $100 cheaper than it was in 2019 because they lowered the price of it in early 2020. So the MacBook Air today that you can buy is actually $100 less expensive than it was a year ago at the same time.
That's crazy.
So they have to do things to save money, and eliminating one core is one of those examples of how they can balance that very low price point. Because if they came out, I think, is it $1099 for the one that has eight cores? If they came out and said, here's the MacBook Air, everybody would flip their lids about how it's so much more expensive than it used to be. But providing one that comes in at $999, they're saying, look, we're trying to keep it down. We're trying to keep the price down as much as we can. Here's the $999 one. You may not want it, but there it is.
You say you want it. Yeah, it's actually $1,249 for the 512 gig, but you're getting the extra GPU core. But I have a theory, and I'm not sure my knowledge is translating to the right thing. But when you're designing chips, you have failure rates. Like in the old days, when you'd have a 2.1 gigahertz and a 2.4 and a 2.6, that's actually because as they build these things, they can't build them all to be perfect. So the ones that aren't as perfect are the ones that are going to run a little bit slower. There's something, the yield wasn't as high. So what I'm wondering is whether that's exactly what's happening here, is they're making a metric ton of these M1 chips, and some of them aren't coming out with enough GPU cores. And they go, okay, we'll just put that, we'll call that the $999 one.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not sure what their process is, but you are exactly right on what generally the process is. And it would make complete sense that that's exactly what Apple would do, because otherwise you've got all these 7-core processor chips that are just sitting in a box somewhere not getting used. And this is a way to use them and not throw them in the garbage, you know. So you're exactly right about the way processors are developed and how they don't always hit on all the pins. Mm-hmm. So this one could be that they have enough that didn't hit on all the pins, but they will fit just right on a less expensive Mac. So
yeah. So if we look at the, let's say the one with eight cores, eight GPU cores for the MacBook Air versus MacBook Pro, I kept looking at it trying to say, why would I have to have a MacBook Pro versus a MacBook Air here? I mean, these two models are so close together. You get two more hours of battery life on the MacBook Pro, so you get 17 versus 15. It weighs 7% heavier, so if weight matters, you know, you might want to go a little bit lighter, but that's not a big difference there. It's just, and they've got the exact same processor in them. How do you decide between those two? I mean, and they're all just like $100 or $200 apart now.
Yeah. And I think if you're just looking at the spec sheet for it, it becomes very confusing as to which one is the one that you want. But if I understand it correctly, the MacBook Pros are designed to pay more attention to those larger, heavier processing needs. So I watched Johnny Cerucci's little 10-minute blurb at the beginning of the event over and over and over again so that I could understand, you know, where all these are in place. So there's the 8 cores, right? They're divided out by 4. If I understand it correctly, the GPU core, it's designed to take in more and accept more and prepare more for those heavy programs. Whereas
it's different, you're saying, between the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air?
Yeah. So I think these are the way, like, these chips are all customized for each individual model.
Oh,
so
they are.
Even though it's the M chip that does. Yeah. I believe what is happening is that they, I don't have good language for this kind of engineering talk, but I believe what happens is that the brain of the chip in a MacBook Pro, it designates itself to be prepared for heavier graphics, heavier processing loads than the MacBook Air, which would just keep all 8 of them sort of split and usable. The MacBook Pro, it like melds itself together when there's a graphics or a process heavy application that comes into play. So I think that's what makes, like, in terms of actual use, that's what makes the MacBook Pro better for pros, because they're the ones who are going to be using, Adobe and Lightroom, and they're going to, be editing things like that. Yeah, Affinity, all that kind of stuff. Whereas MacBook Air, the assumption is that nobody's going to be using as many of those heavy processing power apps. So it'll sort of like keep using all 8 of them in their like individual capacity. I think that also has to do with why the MacBook Air does not have a fan, but the MacBook Pro does continue to have a fan. I think we don't have them in our laps and haven't been able to kind of, test them out. But I believe that that's for the same reason, is that the assumption is that a user of a MacBook Pro is going to be more likely to be using these heavy processing things. And so it's going to need that fan. It won't peak as much. It won't overheat as much. But you're using, harder, stronger processes. So the fan is there to keep that cooled. Whereas with the MacBook Air, the assumption is that you're not going to be using those heavier graphics processing powers. And so it stays within that arc of coolness,
So part of what you just said, I think, might be the other way around, is that on the MacBook Pro, you would be able to peak because you've got a fan to cool it down.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Sorry.
So, this is interesting because they're not giving you any of the information we would normally nerd out to be able to tell the difference. So as, Jane Doe here trying to pick a model, you don't have any of this information. And so you've got the MacBook Pro, which is 25% brighter, which should chew up battery. It's got it's got a fan, so it's gonna probably spin up more and then spin up that fan, and it's gonna be boosting the processor speed. And yet it's got 2 more hours of battery life. So it must have a bigger battery in it, but it's only 7% heavier. So how's it doing that?
I know.
I'm having trouble putting these pieces together. Oh, and it's got a touch bar. So it's got a touch bar, right? That's going to be lighting up, and that's got to use power. How is it getting? I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, presumably you're exactly right that it's a larger battery. But again, just like you said, it's only 7% heavier. How is that? How is Apple doing this? How is Apple
sorcery
managing this? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's pretty impressive.
yeah. It's really, really interesting. Oh, and the other thing I found interesting is we're talking about the speeds and what it can do and everything is, they never said the word gigahertz. I cannot remember the last time a computer with phones, they never do it either. But now, even on the Macs, they're not telling us how many gigahertz it is. How are we supposed to obsess over this if we don't have speeds and numbers to compare?
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing that's happening right now, today, in the world with Apple, is that it's that's not the conversation anymore. And they're really trying to make sure that we stop trying to have those conversations, even though, you know, Geek Bench and things is still making that happen for us. Apple is trying to say, stop thinking about your computer speeds based on gigahertz. Think about things like power efficiency and processor efficiency. That's what you're going to care about, because the specs on the page don't matter as much as the actions that these computers provide. So when you're, you know, running all these programs, it doesn't matter how many gigahertz it is. It matters that it works. And so I think Apple's trying to pull away from that kind of ideology, and they're trying to get us to pull away from that kind of ideology by not talking about it and just saying, look, this M1 chip, it's all you need. You don't need to know anything else about it. But just like you're saying, that becomes a problem when you're trying to figure out which laptop to buy, because when you look at the specs, they kind of look exactly the same. So why would you want the Pro versus the Air?
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting really, really hard. You mentioned Geekbench. I followed a little link from iMore, which is where everybody should start, that took me to a MacRumors link that took me to a Geekbench that where they said that the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro were both 3.2 gigahertz on the M1.
Yeah,
so which is
pretty crazy. Yeah,
I don't know what to obsess on. This is upsetting to me.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to start thinking of things in a new and different way.
I guess.
Once the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro are out in the wild, there's going to be a lot more testing, and we're going to learn a lot more about why one of them is different than the other. So the first time around, if you don't know what to buy, wait. You know, I know we're all a bunch of, you know, FOMO. We got to have the first thing the first day. But I would say, if you don't just know that you're getting the MacBook Pro and you're not sure if the MacBook Air is right for you instead, just wait a little while, because a bunch of people are going to have all, they're going to tear that stuff apart and they're going to test it against everything. And we're going to find out more details about, you know, why they're the same gigahertz, what makes them different. Like, all that stuff is going to be coming out over the next few months for sure.
Well, so here's a philosophical question for you. There are people who need a computer right now, and they're not, I mean, we don't, right? We might want one, but we don't need one right now. But my friend Suzanne has a 2011 MacBook.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And she refers to it as a doorstop now. I mean, I was with her, and I really should have spent some time trying to figure out whether there's anything I could do to speed it up. But anyway, I didn't. And so she's been begging to get a new computer, and she never spends money. She hates spending money on anything. She hates spending money on tech more than anything. Mm-hmm. And yet she is dying here. So she had to have a new computer. She wanted to buy one in the last couple of months, and I wouldn't let her. And so now this
you were smart.
Right. But now I'm telling someone who is not a tech nerd at all. She's brilliant, of course, but this is not her field of interest, to buy the brand new, you know, there's going to be infant mortality problems. There's going to be technical problems. Do you tell them to buy it, or do you say, oh, just buy the old last Intel?
No, I would recommend to buy, especially if it's not a tech crazy person, the iPad, I always mix up iPad Air and MacBook Air. I don't know why. The MacBook Air is absolutely the best new computer right now. And what you're saying makes sense, is there's a fear of whether or not this is going to be, it's going to do what it needs to do. But for number one, Apple wouldn't put this out if they weren't confident that most people are not going to see issues with it. That's why Rosetta exists. That's why the Universal App update exists, is they're trying to make this as seamless and easy as possible. So for an everyday person, definitely the MacBook Air, just do it. Just jump in, dive in, and do it. Well, for anybody who's...
The other half of that, I agree. I told her to buy it, and luckily told her to buy the 512 one, so she got the best one. But since she's the kind of person who keeps a computer for freaking ever, an Intel machine is not going to have as long a life, right?
Yes, exactly.
Even if it's brand new today.
I mean, no offense to Intel, but I mean, they are already outdated, those Intel ones, compared to these M1 processors. So yeah, that absolutely is the case. But there are also reasons why I would recommend a MacBook Pro with Intel to people. So
Oh,
there's definitely going to be people in the world who like rely very specifically on certain apps that maybe they aren't already in the process of being transitioned into universal apps. And even though Apple is, you know, they're promising that there's not going to be any problem in that, we've even seen it run faster on Rosetta. I wouldn't put money on that. If I were somebody whose life depended on a fast, smooth, new, brand new computer right now, I would recommend a MacBook Pro Intel just because, you know, we're still working on this. We're still making sure this works. And if your job and your life, you know, maybe not life, but livelihood. If your job depends, if your livelihood depends on making sure that all of those apps are working and working fast and working efficient, I might, and it's somebody who literally like cannot wait, I would probably recommend an Intel Mac to them.
Interesting.
If they can wait, I would recommend waiting a month or two. Get the feedback. Make sure that it's okay. Make sure it works.
See all the everyday apps get stuff.
Yeah, and everyday stuff, everyday activities on your computer, absolutely, that's going to be fine, no problem. But no matter what Apple is promising, like with Rosetta and Universal Apps, I that's where you start to get to that, like, yeah, but is it? You know.
Well, I did want to bring this up. You know, they had that video that I know it was just a cheerleader video, but I loved it, that showed all the different developers from Adobe and Affinity, by the way. Mm-hmm. I love seeing Affinity right up there with Adobe. Company's actually Serif, but they called them Affinity in it. And getting to see Ken Case from Omni play the harp of all things. I mean, but the message they were giving was that their apps are running wicked great on this and that it wasn't very hard to do. And I'm friends with Steve Harris of Reinvented Software, who wrote Feeder, the application I use for my podcast feed, and Keep It, which is kind of like an Evernote replacement. And he is the whiniest, most complaining developer I've ever met, and I love teasing him. So as soon as I heard about the M1 and how it was, or, you know, heard about Apple Silicon and how it was going to be different, it was going to change everything, they're going to have to recompile, I wrote to him and I said, oh man, I can't wait to hear how much whining you do. And he wrote back and he said, well, you're going to be really disappointed. I've looked at it and it's going to be really easy. If I spent 2 weeks on this, I would be shocked. And this is a guy who can complain about anything, you know? So it was fantastic. And so I don't think those people are shills for Apple. I think that's real.
Right. Yeah. That's fantastic to hear that. Because that is the kind of one of the biggest problems that people get. They're scared when Apple makes big changes to software as to how that's going to negatively affect their ability to continue to develop, and what a thorn in the side it's going to be to have to make these changes. And so, yeah, to hear a developer, especially what you're saying, a developer who is known to complain, who's like, nah, it's super easy. That's so good because that's what we need, is we need to be confident that our apps that we rely on are going to be okay, that they're going to jump into Apple Silicon or the M1 chip, that it's going to run, it's going to be great, it's going to be easy. And, you know, not everybody is a developer, like, you know, like for Serif and, you know, all these, not everyone is that happy with Apple, let's say. There's some apps that I use that I absolutely love, and I can tell they don't get updated very much. They're good. It's not that the developer doesn't want to do it. It's that the developer doesn't want to deal with Apple. And I love them. And so I know that there's still people out there who are resistant to that. But knowing that this particular thing is a very easy transition, I really like to hear that. I look forward to finding out, you know, developers outside of that sort of Apple circle, if you know what I mean, that also develop for Apple. You know, I sideload lots of apps on my Mac because I guess it's technically not sideloading, but I don't use the App Store. Right. Yeah. For lots of apps, because there's so many great developers out there who make so many great things, and they're so restricted by the App Store. So the thought of them being able to just like click a couple boxes and now their app is universal, so that I can use it on Apple Silicon or use it on not Apple Silicon, sounds great. It's because someday, it's going to be years down the road, 5, 10 years, I don't know. It's going to be years down the road. But someday Apple is going to say, if you are not universal, if you haven't made your app universally compatible, people aren't going to be using it, allowed to use it anymore. It's just like when we transitioned to 32-bit and then transitioned to 64-bit. There will come a time where Apple will say, if you didn't make your app universal, Rosetta 2 is not going to work anymore. And people won't be able to use the app on that on a Apple Silicon Mac.
So I did see a description talking about the first Rosetta. They said it only survived through 3 versions of Tiger. That it wasn't even years. That Rosetta 1 was like, okay, hurry up, get off that, let's go, you know?
Yeah.
There, I think back then there was universal binaries, or you could have one of each. They could have separate binaries, but it looks like that's not an option now. I was watching the one I've been waiting for to see whether it's going to work on Big Sur was, well, I guess it was Big Sur, not Apple Silicon, was the Rogue Amoeba apps, the Audio Hijack and Fission and Loopback and SoundSource, all the things that I use were very definitely things that were not updated. And they were like, no, 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 don't go. And they just came out with their preliminary, okay, we think this is going to work. Go ahead and try it. And that's, those are apps that really do very clever things with Apple that are, you know, you're kind of surprised they get away with it kind of thing. So I was pleased to see if they can do it. Now that wasn't necessarily Apple Silicon though.
Right. That was Big Sur. I think, you know, just kind of based on the way you're describing it, it's a bigger deal to go to Big Sur than it is to go to Apple Silicon.
But that seems the rate at which we're seeing the apps come out too. I mean, I'm updating my spare MacBook Pro to the latest, well, in theory, except everything's fiddling, to the latest Big Sur, but I couldn't believe how many apps. Every time I opened the laptop, yesterday I updated everything. Today I just went in and I think it was like 14 apps. So I think developers are going crazy getting it done.
Getting it ready, getting things going, yeah. Well, especially like with Apple Silicon, like, you know, next Friday, the MacBook Air and MacBook Pro are going to be in people's hands. So people are probably rushing to get all that stuff taken care of and ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. But that's exciting.
Yeah.
How fun. And so even if we don't get new hardware toys, we do get a new operating system. So that's fun. One other thing, or a couple more things on the hardware. Why weren't there 4-port MacBook Pros and 4-port Mac Minis and 4-port MacBook Airs? What's with the 2 ports? Do you know?
So Apple said at WWDC that by the end of this year, there will be Apple Macs with Apple Silicon, right?
Right.
So they had to make good on that promise. They didn't have time to do this with the others. So we're going to see 4-port MacBook Pros. We probably won't see 4-port MacBook Airs. I highly doubt that's going to happen. And okay. I don't think we're going to see, I know the Mac Mini, you probably have better understanding or better memory about this, but it lost two ports.
That's what I've been hearing.
Yeah. And I don't think that's going to come back. But the MacBook Pro, the 13-inch with 4 ports, it'll be there. It's just going to be a while. Like, they're just rolling these ones out. So they're starting with these 3 things right here, the MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, and the Mac Mini. And then
so there wasn't a technical reason they couldn't. M1 just does it. Nope, can't do another controller. Dad did Thunderbolt. What? 2? Can't do it.
Nope. Yeah, no. In fact, there's still rumors that they're going to be putting out a new 13-inch MacBook Pro that has a complete redesign, that has less bezels. It's going to be the 14-inch MacBook Pro. So it's very likely that they're in development with a completely redesigned Mac, and they wanted to get this M1 chip out by the end of this year. That's what they promised. They wanted to make good on that promise. But if you don't need that computer right now, why don't you wait a little bit longer? Because that 4-port one is probably coming. I don't know how soon, but that might be the one that's getting a complete redesign, getting the thinner bezel and things like that. So, definitely keep waiting if you don't need one. There's reasons to wait, because there might be, if this is not the right one for you, the right one for you is probably coming within the next year.
Oh, that's fun. I was hoping to get Steve a new one for Christmas, but I guess, well, his birthday's in April. We'll see how that could work out. Is it the same answer for why they only did 16 gigabytes of RAM as a maximum? Or is that a technical reason?
Yeah, so my belief is that just like the two ports versus four ports, that this is their sort of low-end model, if you want to call it that. Not low-end, but you know what I mean. They're kind of, this is the base model that they're providing the M1 chip for. And we're going to see a MacBook Pro later that's going to have 32 gigs or something like that. I'm sure that they want to provide the level of options for each person and each person's needs. And especially with MacBook Pro, there's going to be a lot of people who need 32 gigs of RAM. It's just a necessity. And if they can't have that, they're going to go find a PC. So it's coming, and it's just going to be a matter of the next one that comes out. So, you know, I mentioned this before, Apple didn't completely redo its entire line of Macs. All it did is say, here's two new Macs that have Apple Silicon in them. We still have a bunch of old ones that will fit all of the needs that you want. This isn't the only one you can get. If you want Apple Silicon, here are your options. If you can wait, there'll be more later. We're going to do this with all of the computers. These are just the only two we have for you right now.
Well, I guess it is different now that it's got this unified memory architecture, that if the RAM is part of the chip, then they've got to have a different chip to go to, well, even between the 8 and the 16, those have to be two different versions of the M1. So maybe, I don't know, I've heard people saying it's going to be the M1X when it can go higher.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Or the M2, you know, they have a lot of run room with. There's many numbers that can go after that.
Yeah, and that's kind of like they've mentioned more than once that each one of these M1 chips are customized for each Mac computer, because each Mac computer has different needs. So I guess I agree that I don't know. I have a feeling, I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there, but I think it would be kind of neat, I guess, if Apple just had different names for all of them, and it wasn't necessarily M1, M1Z, but maybe something like M1 or M2 or M3, you know, to like kind of show you, you know, the M1 chip is for the base model, and the M2 chip is for if you need 32 gigs of RAM, and then the M3 chip is for desktop, you know, like I think something like that, marketing wise, I like that better than M1X or M1Z. So I don't know, but you know, they're going to call it whatever they're going to call it. So,
right. It could be the N, and then we won't know which people are saying M or N, which one did you say? The last thing I wanted to ask about, and this kind of folds back to what you were saying about how Apple doesn't want us to worry our pretty little heads about words like gigahertz, putting words in your mouth. The other thing they talked about was the improved camera, and yet they didn't say, is it still 720p?
It is still 720p. So what they're talking about is that the power and efficiency of the M1 chip improves the ISP of the camera itself. So it brings in more light.
Image signal processing.
Yeah. Okay. So it brings in more light. It does a better job of balancing, you know, if there's brightness in the background, it balances your face so that it's not dark. It's better at being a 720 camera. So that one was a little bit of, I mean, just knock it up to 1080. Come on.
How hard
is that? Yeah. I was a little disappointed in that too, because I get it. Like it's improving the quality of the 720, but it's not improving it from 720. And I've used a couple of different webcams. And when I read all that kind of stuff about like, you know, really great, you know, image balancing of bright whites and darks and blah, blah, blah. And then I use the camera. I'm like, that doesn't look any different than the other webcam that I had. So I don't know about that stuff.
You know, I've got an odd observation that I haven't actually talked about on the show is I've got a Logitech C920. It's 1080p, blah, blah, blah. And every once in a while, whatever app I'm working on, it just chooses the built-in webcam on my LG 5K display. That's what you're looking at right now. we're doing video to the audience.
That's
we're doing video.
That's a great
one. Yeah, it's been. In fact, I think it's webcam. Actually better. But I keep using the Logitech because, well, I paid $100 for it. You know, $129, whatever. I need to use it. But the one in this monitor is really good.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's really clear. I would have assumed that you're on a, like a like an external webcam. Just it's really nice. So.
Yeah. So I don't have. excuse for
whereas
it.
I don't know, you can look at, I actually have a light on to, because let me just show you real quick. I know this is for audio only, but this is what my camera looks like.
Oh gosh, she is like in complete silhouette with a, she's got a white wall and a white door behind her, and now I can basically see very few features in her face.
Yeah,
so you're blinding yourself so that I can see you.
Yes, because the built-in webcam on my iMac is just
poo-poo.
Not very good. So
and
presumably,
the reason she's not using her regular camera is because everything is fiddly.
Because everything is fiddly.
It simply refused to talk to Skype today. So that
it just didn't. Yep, it just said, no, I'm not gonna.
Well, this has been fun. I learned a lot, and I got to vent on some of the things that were bugging me, and maybe learn to be a little more patient. Now that you've given me rumors to noodle on what's next, then I can have some fun. And I did, like I said, I did order a Mac Mini. We have a 6-year-old 2.4 gigahertz i5 Mac Mini with a spinning hard drive in it. But you know what? It's our Plex server, and it does some ChronoSync between and Carbon Copy Cloner between my two NASs. We will absolutely not notice if it's faster, but we wanted to buy something new, so we
just got to get that.
Yeah. By the way, if you buy the stock model, you can get it next week. But if you upgrade it moves to the middle of December. So.
Oh. Wow, that's too much waiting. Did you get the stock model or did you upgrade?
No, I upgraded, so now I have to wait.
Now you have to wait.
It's horrible. It's a nightmare.
I ordered the wallet, the magnetic wallet for the back of the phone, and it's not shipping until the first week of December. And why is that taking so long? I want it right now.
So, you know, one of our listeners, I think it was Marty, just got his. He says it only holds 2 cards. And it's super sticky to get them in and out. So it's almost impossible to get them out. And it won't charge with that on. You have to take it off.
Yeah, you do have to take it off. Yeah. So, Marty, if you're listening, it's leather. So leather, it has to get a little. I've used many wallet apps and they all start out that way. Wallet cases. And they all start out that way. They're all too tight and too sticky and only hold 2 cards. And the leather becomes a little more supple over time and has a little bit of give. What's really interesting about wallet apps is that they don't stretch out. They don't overstretch. Did I say app again?
Yeah.
Wallet cases is that they don't overstretch. So it won't eventually become too loose, but it will loosen up. It will get easier to take your cards out. I think that I believe that Apple, like they don't say that you can put 4 cards in it, but I believe that it's meant to comfortably fit 4 cards eventually. But again, if you start putting 4 cards in there, just you always have to have 4 cards in there because once it will it shape itself to that stretch. So you don't want to start with 4 and then switch over to 2. But it's like a baseball glove; it needs a little bit of use, a little bit of, I mean, maybe even get some leather oil and try to loosen it up or something.
Right? So, yeah. Just sit there and obsessively slide your cards in and out, in and out, in and out.
Try to make that work better.
Well, I'm glad we were able to personally help Marty with his issue here. All right. Well, I'm going to cut us off here. So much fun. I'm a little disappointed we don't have another announcement scheduled, so we don't have a reason to talk, but we will figure out some excuse to do it again soon.
Well, probably March, because we're hearing rumors that there's going to be another one in March. So,
yay. All right. If people want to follow you online one more time, how do they do that?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Appaholic, APPAHOLIK. And if you want to hit me up with an email, I've actually had quite a few great conversations with people that listen to the show that have emailed me. I'm at lori@imore.com. That's lory@imore.com. Hit me up.
Well, great. I'm glad people are writing you. I know I've gotten so much great feedback from having you on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
That's so great. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond. Did you notice there weren't any ads in the show? That's because this show is not ad supported. It's supported by you. If you learned something, or maybe you were just entertained, consider contributing to the Podfeet podcast. You can do that by going over to podfeet.com and look for the big red button that says support the show. When you click that button, you're going to find different ways to contribute. If you like to do a one-time donation, you can click the PayPal button. If you want to make a recurring contribution, click the weekly Patreon button. Or another way to contribute is to record a listener contribution. It's a great way to help the Nocilla Castaways learn from you. If you want to contact me for any reason, you can email me at allison@podfeet.com and you can follow me on Twitter at Podfeet. Maybe you want to talk to other Nocilla Castaways. There's two great places to do that. You can do that in our Slack group at podfeet.com/Slack, or you can join our Facebook group at podfeet.com/Facebook. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.